Okay, thank you so much for having me. What a zechus for me to be here. And our learning tonight should be a zechus for the Cholei Kehila, as well as the Sof Sha'ar Cholei Yisrael. So I'm going to share my screen. It's always a fun dance trying to balance the two between having sources for those who want them and also not making it too source heavy for those who prefer to take it easy a little bit. So we'll do both. We'll put the sources on the screen for those who want to follow along. And for those who don't want, there's a line between the speaker and the sources. You can slide that line to the left and make the sources smaller, make me bigger. By all means, put me on your flat screens. Let's blow this up. Can we see? Yes, we can see. Okay, so like I mentioned, I'm very excited to be here tonight, to be starting. For the past 6 months, I've been getting wonderful texts from people that we know in the community. When are you starting? When are you starting? And it's, June 1st, which sounded farther away 6 months ago, and now it's seeming really close. But here we are, before June 1st even. Who ever heard of something Jewish starting not just on time, but actually early? And here we are. And one of my favorite things about this opportunity to start a new position is I get to use my jokes over again. People tend to remember the jokes and the stories. So here's an opportunity to get a reset button for all those opportunities. And we'll start this evening. So they tell a story about a cruise ship that was going around the Caribbean. And the tour guide was pointing out all the different islands and the history of everything going on currently and in past times. And as they get close to one particular island, totally empty, totally desolate, they see just one man standing there, totally disheveled, emaciated, unkempt, overgrown, and as the ship starts to get a little closer, this man starts to jump up and down and wave his arms frantically, and they're, you know, too far to hear, but they can tell he's screaming on the top of his lungs. And some of the tourists ask the tour guide, "It's like, what's with that island? What's with that guy?" And the tour guide laughs and he says, "I have no idea, but every year when we pass this spot, that guy goes super, super, super crazy." So the Jewish calendar is like that boat. Every year we pass by a certain attraction, certain things that are calling out to us, certain things that if we took the time to listen, we'd realize actually had a very urgent, very important message for us. And the goal is to be a little closer. The goal is to actually take closer looks at what it is that's passing us by to make sure that we're not missing an opportunity for something urgent, not to wait until next year again. And I was thinking about this time of year, about Sfiras HaOmer, had the question of, should I talk about Parsha or talk about the time of year? And then I realized that this week's Parsha, Parshas Emor, is about Sfiras HaOmer. How do you like that? So by talking about Sfiras HaOmer, we have the opportunity to both talk about the Parsha and talk about this time of year. When I mention that Sfira is in this week's Parsha, I'm talking about the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, of counting from Pesach until Shavuos. But often we use the word Sfira to refer to something else, and that's referring to the Avelus of Sfira. People ask questions like, do you keep first Sfira or second Sfira? Can I go to a wedding during Sfira? Can I go to a ball game during Sfira? What do you mean Sfira? Sfira means counting. The biblical mitzvah to count from Pesach to Shavuos. You mean the Avelus that has been typically and traditionally observed during the time of Sfiras HaOmer, which takes a lot longer to say, granted. So we say Sfira. But this idea, and source number one, and again, I'll have the sources here as to guide this year, but we'll try to do very minimal reading for those who would find it burdensome. So the sources are there for those who would like to follow along, but by no means do you have to. And again, slide me to the left to increase the size of the speaker. So the idea is, the Shulchan Aruch says in source number one, that the reason we observe Avelus about not getting married and not getting haircuts during this time is because at this time Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim passed away. 24,000 Talmidim died, a terrible tragedy for the Jewish people. So at this time we observe several customs of Avelus during Sfira. But the reality is, it has nothing to do with Sfira. So we can call that question number one. Is it just a colloquialism that we refer to it as Sfira? Or is there actually something deeper, a connection between Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, who died, happens to be, during this time? Question number two, if you think about it, we have different minhagim I mentioned before, first Sfira, second Sfira, and right in the middle somewhere coming up next week is Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer in source number two, we mentioned, is like that's the day Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim stopped dying. So it's so much of a happy day, as the Ramah says in source number two. What's surprising is that how can there be different minhagim for Sfira? How can it be? We're observing the yahrzeit of people who died. So then there should be a set time. We should know when they died. And we should observe that. There's a machlokes when they died. Do they die before Lag BaOmer or do they die after Lag BaOmer? How can there be different customs? And yet, the Ramban source number 3 says, there are those who only start Sfira at Rosh Chodesh Iyar, and then they go all the way until Shavuot. So question number 2 is, how can there be different Minhagim? Shouldn't we know when they died, and shouldn't it matter when we're observing Sfira in their memory? And the third question is, what in the world does it mean to observe Sfira, the Minhagim of Avelis of Sfira, after Lag BaOmer? The Rama says in over here, in Sif Gimel, that even those who observe Sfira until Shavuos still celebrate Lag BaOmer. That doesn't make any sense. If Lag BaOmer is when they stop dying, how can you observe Sfira after Lag BaOmer? What are you mourning? Who, I ask, are you mourning? How is this possible? So many questions. And the commentators on the Shulchan Aruch are really bothered by this idea of second Sfira. How is it possible that if Lag BaOmer, when they stop dying, doesn't make sense to observe it afterward? And if really they kept dying after Lag BaOmer, then what is so exciting about Lag BaOmer, if really it wasn't the end of all the perishing? If you look at the Taz in source number 2, about 400 years ago, he's bothered by, according to this, if you're going to keep second Sfira, then there really is no significance to Lag BaOmer. And his approach is that Lag BaOmer is significant because they stopped dying on Lag BaOmer, and as far as why there are those who observe Avelis after Lag BaOmer, it must be for something else. He suggests the Crusades. Maybe other bad things happened. Okay, that's possible. But we weren't taught that in school. We were always taught that we're observing this entire Avelis, and all those who are observing it for Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim. So, by inventing something else that happened at this time as the source, not so smooth. In source number 3, the Aruch HaShulchan, 150 years ago, he says that they continued to die all the way from Pesach to Shavuos, and he suggests that there are some communities that actually observe both spheres, all the way from Pesach to Shavuot, but they still shave and party on Lag BaOmer. You know why? Where it's bolded, he says that they stopped dying Lag BaOmer, and then they reverted to dying after Lag BaOmer. Well, then what kind of simcha is Lag BaOmer if it wasn't really the end of the deaths? It was just a hiatus for one day, and then all the tragedy resumed. Again, very hard to understand what that means. The Mishnah Berurah, Chavetz Chaim, in source number 4, in his Ber Halacha, on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, he tries to explain what's going on, and he suggests that maybe there was another approach, that Lag didn't refer to the 33rd day of the Omer. Maybe Lag meant that there was a tradition. Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim died on 33 sporadic days from Pesach to Shavuos. So that's why you could observe Sfira even at the later half of Sfira. Okay, what about Lag BaOmer? If really that's not what it's talking about, then why is Lag BaOmer festive? He's not sure. If you look where I bolded it over here, he says maybe there was one day they wanted to symbolize that at some point it stopped. And he says, "Ubachru b'yom lamagim b'omer." Why did they choose Lag BaOmer? He says, "Ulay me'ezatam." There might be some reason. Well, that's not so encouraging, is it? It might be for some reason. Where are our answers? What is going on over here? So these are the questions I would like to address tonight to give a different perspective as the ship passes the period of Sfira, where we know we're counting towards something, we're building up to Matan Torah, we're trying to work on ourselves, trying to figure out what is this Sfira all about? Why is the Avelis called Sfira? How can there be different minhagim about this Avelis and this Sfira? And how does it make sense? How do we balance Lag BaOmer with the fact that we're still observing some of this Avelis after Lag BaOmer? So, in a classic Jewish fashion, the best way to answer some tough questions is to ask some more questions. So let's look at the original source, right? We have this idea taught to us as little children that Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim all died. And the source for this actually is a Gemara in just this week's Daf Yomi. How do you like that? We're combining Parsha, time of the year, and the Daf Yomi in Meseches Yevamos. And this really is the source where it all begins, where we can figure out and see if you notice something missing from this Gemara. Keep your eyes and ears peeled to see if something stands out to you as quite lacking, quite shocking, to be honest, that is missing from our understanding of this story. What is the context of the Gemara? Why does the Gemara tell this story? The context of the Gemara is the mitzvah of pru urvu, mitzvah to have children and to have a big family. And the Brisa over here in source number 5 quotes a pasuk in Koheles and explains as follows: when a person has children in their youth, they should continue to have children in their old age, because you never know which children are going to end up being successful and good. The pasuk in Koheles says, "Baboker zraz zarecha," in the beginning, in the morning, in the early part of your life, you should sow your seeds and plant seeds and have children. But even later, in the evening, don't hold your hand back. You don't know what's going to turn out well. That's talking about having children. Rabbi Akiva, our Rabbi Akiva uses the same pasuk for a similar idea. Not about having children, but about having Talmidim. And he says, even if a person taught Torah and had lots of Talmidim in his youth, he should continue to have more teaching and more Talmidim in his old age, because you never know which Talmidim are going to last and which ones are going to die tragically. Same pasuk, in the morning, you do your efforts, and even later in life, don't stop, because you never know how things are going to turn out. Oh, speaking of not knowing how things are going to turn out for your Talmidim, the Gemara tells a story. And here's the story. Amru, they said the following. Shneimasar elef sugim talmidim hayulal Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs, 24,000 talmidim. And the Gemara continues, v'kulan meisu v'perak echa, they all died in a single part of the year. V'pnei shelo nagu kavod zeh bezeh. They weren't treating each other respectfully. The Gemara continues, the world was desolate with Torah. The entire Torah was snuffed out of the world until Rabbi Akiva went to the south and he picked up five new Talmidim, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, and they are the ones, the Gemara says, that reinstated Torah to its glory and brought back what was surely almost lost. All right, there's nothing over here about Pesach Teshuvos, nothing at all. Just that they died. And the Gemara adds two things. Number one, where it's bolded, Tana, Kula Meisu mi Pesach v'Arat Seres. Listen carefully. They died when? From Pesach to Shavuos. Okay. Gemara continues, one more addition. The Gemara in the last line, where it's underlined, says, Kula Mesu Misa Ra, they all died a horrific death. And what is that? Askara. What is Askara? The Gemara in the first parak of Brachos has a tradition that there's 903 different types of death, and Askara is the worst, the most painful type of death, some kind of mouth and esophagus disease, some very painful death. Anything missing from this Gemara? Okay, it's not so interactive. But I imagine you're all thinking, what happened to Lag BaOmer? Hey, we've been duped. We've been taught as kids that they died into Lag BaOmer, hence Lag BaOmer parties, and I got a flyer today for the barbecue. I'm happy to be on the email list for that. Barbecue is fantastic. Where's Lag BaOmer in this story at all? Pesach until Shavuos? We're busy here figuring out first half of Sfira, second half of Sfira, trying to figure out how it makes sense to observe after Lag BaOmer. But you know what? Lag BaOmer is nowhere to be found. Interesting. If you look in source number 6, the Beis Yosef, from Yosef Karo, he quotes another interpretation, another source of the same tradition from Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, who died, and there's a different text. Perhaps the text he quotes is that they died from Pesach ad pros ha'atzeres. He does some fancy math that pros is Aramaic for 15, 49 minus 15 is 34, so then somewhere around Lag BaOmer, they stopped dying. We don't have that text. The Gemara doesn't say that. Our Gemara says that they died from Pesach until Shavuos. But you know what? At least this confusion, this newest question, kind of gives context to what everyone else was saying before. Suddenly it makes more sense how there can be various opinions. Suddenly it makes more sense how you could have Avelis after Lag BaOmer. Suddenly Lag BaOmer doesn't sound so special after all. Hence why there were reasons given for other things that are going on. But for the rest of the Shiur, I would like to try to bring this back. Back to our early education, back to an understanding that we were taught as kids, we're going to assume, for the rest of this year, that as taught as kids, Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim stopped dying Lag BaOmer, and they stopped dying for good. That is going to be our assumption for the rest of this year, which makes our work cut out for us. Why does the Gemara not say that? Why does the Gemara say Pesach Teshuvos? Why are there different opinions about when to observe the Avelis? What is Lag BaOmer all about, and how does it make sense to observe anything after Lag BaOmer? How can we really straddle this fence on both sides? If they really died Pesach until Lag BaOmer, why doesn't the Gemara say that? So let me give you some context. Think about it this way. Is it really wrong if in reality, as we're going to assume, they only die between Pesach and Lag BaOmer? Is it wrong to say they die between Pesach and Shavuos? No, it's not incorrect. Technically, Pesach to Lag BaOmer is between Pesach and Shavuos. It is true to say that their deaths occurred between Pesach and Shavuos, because Pesach to Lag BaOmer is between Pesach and Shavuos. So it's not wrong, it's just imprecise. It's not exacting to say Pesach to Shavuos when you could have narrowed it down to Pesach to Lag BaOmer. So why would the Gemara do that? Do we ever do that when we try to figure out something with statistics or counting something? Do we ever widen the parameters? So I like baseball. I like to use baseball as an example. I'm thinking back to my prava at the Young Israel West Hempstead 6 months ago when I was asked a tremendous amount of very good, strong, powerful, on-the-spot questions about Aguna and Gebracht, all the hard-hitting questions. And then we had the food and the further schmoozing downstairs, And one woman came over to me, and she said, "You didn't answer the hardest question." And I thought, uh-oh. She's like, "Yankees or Mets?" So at the time, you know, I had to make sure to be diplomatic and careful about it. Now that I have the job, I grew up in Queens, but somehow I'm a Yankees fan. Hope no one leaves the Zoom because of that. But let's say in baseball. Baseball is a sport all about statistics, right? So sometimes after the first month of the season, they'll say, here are Aaron Judge's, very good player on the Yankees. These are his stats for the month of April. He had, I don't remember, 7 home runs in the month of April. Now hang on a second. Sometimes the season doesn't start till April 3rd. And sometimes there's an off day on April 30th. How dare you say that he got these stats, 7 home runs between, in the month of April, when in reality, it was only between April 3rd and April 29th. And the answer to that is that April is a well-known unit. April is a month of the spring. It's a month of the year, the first month of the baseball season. It makes sense to widen the parameters from April 3rd to April 29th to the month of April because it's a well-known unit. It would not make sense to say these are his stats from May 14th until June 1st unless you're talking about games that he played from May 14th to June 1st. If he only played from May 20th until May 29th, it would not make sense to expand the parameters of the 14th of May to June 1st, though it's true technically, because why would you expand to an arbitrary, ridiculous parameter of time? So let's go back to our case over here. We're going to assume they only die between Pesach and Lag BaOmer, and yet the Gemara widened the parameters to Pesach and Shavuos. Now, if it had said they die between Pesach and Lag BaOmer, but we're calling it Pesach to Rosh Hashanah, again, technically true, Pesach to Lag BaOmer is within Pesach to Rosh Hashanah, but that would be imprecise for no good reason. Pesach to Rosh Hashanah is not a real unit of time that makes any sense to us. But Pesach to Shavuos is a real unit. We know what that is. It's in this week's Parsha. It's called Sfiras HaOmer. So what if, when the Gemara is telling us they died between Pesach and Shavuos, they're not telling us when they died. We know when they died. They died until Lag BaOmer, which is why Lag BaOmer has some significance to it. But the Gemara is less focused about when they died. And the Gemara is more focused on the significance of why they died. The Gemara is emphasizing less about what technical days did they perish. The Gemara is more concerned with the days that they died were between Pesach and Shavuos, a.k.a. they died during Sfiras HaOmer. That's more important than any particular yahrzeit. More important for us to know, there's something about Sfiras HaOmer that explains why they died at this time and why we observe it thousands of years later. A lot of bad things happened to us over the years. Why is this one tragedy something that we've all taken to heart, we've all accepted? There's something about the fact that they died during Sfiras HaOmer that we're supposed to recognize as a lesson for us as our ship passes the island at this time of year to listen to the calling to come a little closer and understand what is Sfiras HaOmer all about. So let's ask the question, what is Sfiras HaOmer all about? So if you study this week's Parsha, you learn about the Omer. The Omer, often another misnomer, we say like counting Sfira. In English, counting Sfira means counting. Really, it's counting the Omer. What is the Omer? The Omer is a unit of measurement, and it refers to a special carbon that was offered on the second day of Pesach, the carbon Omer, special carbon of barley flour that was offered in the Beis HaMikdash on the second day of Pesach. And the Pasuk in this week's Parsha says, we count from that day of bringing the carbon Omer all the way until Shavuos, but there's another special carbon called the Shtei HaLechem, the two breads. Now, each of these carbonos are very special. The carbon Omer was made of barley flour, which is very unique, because most offerings of flour that were offered in the Beis HaMikdash had two qualifications. Number one, they were wheat flour. And number two, they were matzah. The dough was not given time to rise. The carbon Omer on Pesach was unique in that it was barley flour as opposed to wheat flour. And the Shtei HaLechem on Shavuos was unique in that it was allowed to rise, it became chametz. You would think nowadays that we don't have these karbanos anymore, maybe Sfiras HaOmer is no longer mandated biblically. And that's really what most of the Rishonim hold. That because Sfiras HaOmer was counting from this karban to that karban, nowadays we don't have those karbanos anymore. The mitzvah is at best a zecher, some way of remembering times of old. So maybe the obligation nowadays to count the Omer is only midrabanan. And most of the opinions hold that. But if you look in source number 7, the Aruch HaShulchan quotes from the Rambam's opinion actually is that Sfiras HaOmer nowadays, even without the Karbonos, is still obligated on a biblical level. And that is almost impossible to understand. The Parsha makes it very clear it's all about counting from this Karbon to that Karbon, from Pesach until Shavuos. Why would any of that still apply when we no longer have Karbonos? And listen to what the Aruch HaShulchan 150 years ago suggests. It's going to become the foundation of everything that we need to know about Sfira to understand Rabbi Akiva and to understand for ourselves. The Aruch HaShulchan here in source number 7 argues that the real goal, according to the Rambam of Sfiras HaOmer, is not about the technical korbanos. They too are just symptoms of the real underlying purpose of Sfiras HaOmer. He writes, the goal is that Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people without the Torah, are like animals. We have physical bodies, we can talk, we can eat, we can communicate, we can build civilizations, but to be sophisticated, we have to be human beings of elevated stature. The goal of Sfiras HaOmer and the idea of counting up to Matan Torah, to get the Torah to become humanistic, to become actual human beings. And that really is the goal of this time of year, he suggests. And how did the Karbanos play into that? He explains very beautifully these anomalies. The idea that the Karban Omer was barley. We don't really have barley bread. You see in the supermarkets, you see wheat bread, whole wheat bread. You see rye bread. You see spelt. You see oat. Ever see barley bread? Uh-uh. We don't need barley bread. Barley is for animals, the Gemara says. Barley is an animal food. And the Shtelechem is not just wheat, but it's fluffy wheat. It's chametz. It has time to rise. It's very, very special, elegant food. So the transformation from Pesach to Shavuos, Sfiras HaOmer, is all about becoming more humanistic, becoming more sophisticated, elevating ourselves from animals into human beings. So much so, says the Aruch HaShulchan, that the Rambam understands, even without the technical korbanos that symbolize that transformation, the underlying goal of transforming ourselves into human beings is still true even without the korbanos. Nowadays, still, we have an obligation to work on ourselves and to grow and become human beings. So how do we do that? What is the way? What really separates human beings from animals to really talk about elevating ourselves during this time? And the early philosophers, 1,000 years ago, they broke down different categories of the species in the world. They broke it down. They have domain, inanimate objects. Higher than that is tzomeach, plants which actually grow. Then they have animals which actually walk around and talk or make sounds. And then, above that all, we have mankind. But they don't refer to mankind as being special because he walks on two legs or because he has opposable thumbs. The term that they use, look in source number 8 in the Kuzari, Yudah Levi 900 years ago, Midaber. There's something about speech, something about the Koach HaDibur that separates man from beast. And that really is the idea quoted by Targum Onkelos in source number 9 and source number 10, the Pasuk, when describing man's life force starting to begin with. It says, Hashem blew force into man's life, and then man was living. What does it mean man was living? In source number 10, Onkelos says, man became a spirit of speech. Ruach Memalala means a spirit of speech. It is speech which allows us to become elevated from animals and to become actual human beings. The Chafetz Chaim in source number 11 explains this so well, that the idea of having proper speech, we say, Mia ish hechafetz chaim, who is the man who desires life? Netzor lashon chameira, usfasecha midaber merma, a person who guards their tongue. Look at the words, Miha ish, he says, where it's bolded. Who is a man? Who is part of humanity? Only a person who actually perfects their speech. So now think about it. We just said that the Gemara is not telling us when they died. We know they died between Pesach and Lag BaOmer. But by widening the scope from Pesach until Shavuos, the Gemara is telling us why they died. The Gemara is telling us that they died at this time because of something that they lost in Sfiras HaOmer. Sfiras HaOmer is all about proper speech. Sfiras HaOmer is all about elevating ourselves to become more humane with our speech. If we could somehow figure out that Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim died because of improper speech, then what the Gemara is telling us is that they died during Sfiras HaOmer. Not every single day, but they died during Sfiras HaOmer. That's significant because it's a time to work on speech. And they did the opposite. They failed in the area of speech. You know, the Gemara didn't tell us much. Why they died? Lo nagu kavod ze lezeh. They didn't give respect to each other. How are we supposed to figure out why they died? But if you look at source number 12 and source number 13, the Maharsha on the Gemara and the Maharal on that Gemara, they explain, the Gemara gave us a clue. They died with askarel. We said one of the worst types of death in the whole world. What does askara come from? The quote from the Gemara in Shabbos, wouldn't you know it? Do you know what askara comes from? Comes for? Improper speech. Lashon hara. Lo nagu kavod delezeh, they explain, refers to lashon hara. Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim failed in the area of speech, which is why it's so fitting that they died during Sfiras HaOmer. So important, in fact, that that's all the Gemara highlights. The Gemara doesn't even talk about when they actually died. You know what? It doesn't even matter as much when they died. What matters so much more than the day that they actually died is the fact that they died during Sfiras HaOmer, between Pesach and Shavuos. And we need to internalize that they died between Pesach and Shavuos, which really answers all of our questions. Now it turns out that calling this Avela Sfira is not just a colloquialism. We happen to call it Sphira. No, the Sphira is the key point. They died during Sphira. That's the Gemara's point. Different yurt sites. Well, you know what? It turns out we don't really care about the exact details of when they died. What really matters most is they died on 33 days between Pesach and Shavuos, so we observe whatever we want to observe it. As long as it's 33 days between Pesach and Shavuos, we're getting the key point. We are observing, we are learning the lessons of their life and their mistakes, and our opportunity to correct it, we have an opportunity to say, by 33 days somewhere from Pesach to Shavuos, here's an opportunity for us to be able to grow in the area of speech. As long as it's sometime between Pesach and Shavuos, we are doing the right thing. And that's how it could be even after Lag BaOmer, because it's less important about what the day they stopped dying is, and what's much more important is to figure out that it took place, as the Gemara said, between Pesach and Shavuos, and a time where we're supposed to elevate ourselves to become more humane, more humanistic, which we're saying now means to elevate our sense of speech. Which leaves only one final question, and that is, then what's Lag BaOmer all about? If it turns out that we don't really care so much about when they stop dying, what exactly is the simcha of Lag BaOmer? And a better question to ask is, Lag BaOmer shouldn't be happy at all, because Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim all died. So you know why they stopped dying in Lag BaOmer? Because they were all dead. There were no more of them to die. That's a simcha. They stopped dying because they were all depleted. What exactly is so joyous about Lag BaOmer? In the Pri Chadash in source number 14, 350 years ago, in the back of the Shulchan Aruch, he asked this question. What exactly is so exciting? They all died. That's the end of that. And he explains so beautifully, where it's underlined in source 14, perhaps the real simcha of Lag BaOmer, what the Gemara said. Rabbi Akiva picked himself up. He didn't give up. He went down to the south. He found five new Talmidim. And he started to rebuild and reinstore the Torah. Now, if you think about it, how depressed he must have been at that time. He had built up 24,000 Talmidim. He could have said to himself, what is five more students going to do? What could they possibly accomplish? But you know what those students accomplished? Those students, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar, they're not just any random students. They're the ones who you find throughout Shas. Look in source 15, source 16, all of the rest of Torah Shebaal Peh, Mishnayos, Brisos, Tosefta, Sifra, Sifrei, they're all taught by these five Talmidim according to their teacher, Rabbi Akiva. And these five teachers, these five students, Rabbi Akiva, all became the teacher of a very special person, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. He learned by these five of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was the one responsible for putting together Torah Shebaal Peh as we have it today. Rabbi Akiva could have given up. He could have thrown in the towel. Lag BaOmer represents the rebuilding, that they finished dying, but that's not so joyous, that he picked himself up and didn't give up and said, let's rebuild. And if you think about it, that was the Gemara's whole point. How did the Gemara start? In the morning, you should do your best to sow the fields, but even in the evenings, continue to work, because you never know what's going to work out well. That was why the Gemara quoted this story. The whole point of the story in the Gemara was to teach us. Even when things look bleak, even when things are upsetting and they seem impossible, you never know what one small seed can do. You never know what one, picking yourself off the ground, taking a step forward, you never know how much you can accomplish. So now we have this amazing opportunity during Sphiras HaOmer to talk about this balance. On the one hand, we have this time of year to focus on our speech, to perfect ourselves in the areas of guarding from Lashon Hara, and really the best way to replace a bad habit is to replace it with something positive, to find a way to speak nicely about each other, to compliment each other, to speak nicely behind someone else's back. You imagine that, speaking nicely behind someone else's back, to plan ahead. There are many opportunities we know for Lashon Hara, and the best way to avoid it is to think ahead. What is coming up? Which people do I tend to speak and gossip with in a way that's unhealthy and unhelpful for our community's cohesiveness? Maybe I can try to steer the conversations ahead of time. Maybe I can find a way to avoid certain gatherings where I know I always fall in the pits of speaking Lashon Hara. And this is the opportunity that we have over here during Sphira. So I'd like to put over here at the end of the sheet some takeaways, some things to walk away with for us to understand. Number one is that it's not a coincidence that we call this Avela Sphira. It actually is very significant that it happened at this time. We also explained why, with this understanding, there's a possibility for different minhagim, including some past Lag BaOmer. It matters less about the actual yurt sites. We're not observing a yurt site. That would require an exact day. It's more important is to take the lesson of what happens when there's a time period of the year for proper speech and it's used ineffectively. Look what happened to Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim. Sphiras HaOmer is a time with or without the Karbanos, according to the Rambam, where there's a biblical obligation to work on elevating our sense of humanity, which we're saying means to work on our Koach HaDibur, to work on our proper speech. And Lag BaOmer is that reminder in the middle of Sphira. If we feel like we've fallen, we feel like we've done so much wrong until now. How can we possibly go forward? It seems too daunting. Lag BaOmer says, in the midst of keeping this in mind about proper speech, remember, you can always pick yourself up. Today is the first day of a bright new future. Journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single Lashon Hara step about being careful. Shmiras HaLashon, there's never too late to turn everything around. And some practical ideas about replacing with positive speech, knowing how to steer conversations in a positive way, and avoiding situations where we know we're prone to speak Lashon Hara. If we're able to do this, we come close to the island and hear the opportunities that are in front of us, not to let them pass by, to take note, to take heart of the screaming opportunity calling out to us. If you look a little deeper, a little closer, Siras HaOmer, now is that opportunity to remember what happens with improper speech, the damage it can cause. On the flip side, the positive side, the opportunities that we all have with our tefillah, with our tehillim, for refuah shleima, for yeshuos, for only good things. We should use this as opportunities to march toward Matan Torah and toward humanity. Thank you so much for having me here. It was really a wonderful opportunity to meet so many of you. I'm looking forward on Sunday at the dinner to meet some more. And then June 1st, we'll hit the ground running for Shavuos. We'll all have some delicious chametz. We'll have some delicious cheesecake. And we'll get to interact that way as well.